Yes, it is being streamed on YouTube as well. So for those of you who are on YouTube, if you would like to ask questions or provide comments, then you can go ahead and hop onto the Zoom call. And we just got a message saying that it's not being streamed yet, but I think that they are working on trying to stream it on YouTube. But in any case, you know, we have these two mediums that are available. So, okay, good. Alhamdulillah, it's been fixed on YouTube as well. So for those of you who are on YouTube, if you want to participate in terms of commenting or asking questions, then go ahead and hop onto the Zoom call. And otherwise, if you're just in view mode only, you can go ahead and watch it on YouTube. Okay, so what is our program for today? Inshallah, I'm going to be going through a presentation, and inshallah, at the end, we have some time for comments, questions, and answers. So I'm gonna go ahead and share my screen here. Okay, bismillah. Actually, let me go ahead and do that with the audio so that.
Yes. Are you able to share a screen, Sheikh Salim?
I am, yes. The host,
you should be able to, okay.
Yes, I'm good. Okay. All right, so when we look at the topic of parenting during the pandemic, we're trying to understand and be some of the guidelines and strategies that we as parents can make use of, and particularly focus on the Islamic perspective. I mean, you can go and listen to a whole, a whole bunch of doctors and psychologists, and they have a lot of good advice to offer for sure. But we're trying to understand, in particular, like what is it that our faith teaches us, and what can we be reminded of, and what do we have to be particularly aware of when it comes to parenting during the time of crisis, during the time of trial, and what's happening with our children as well. And you know, the verse that I selected for kind of as a background verse for our presentation today is this verse. It for some reason it kind of struck me, where this is dua that's being made by the army, which is led by Talut, and they're saying, the dua they have is أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم قالوا ربنا أفرغ علينا صبرا وثبت أقدامنا وانصرنا على القوم الكافرين. Our Lord, pour patience upon us, make our feet steady, and assist us against the faithless lot. In this dua, there are three components that are mentioned. One of them is the importance of having sabr. Sabr is the quality of self-restraint, of endurance, of being able to control one's base and low instincts. The second one is the quality of perseverance, make our footsteps firm. The idea that in the long run, we want to make sure that we don't give up. And the third one is the idea of having a mission, that we're not just here for ourselves, we're here for a greater purpose. So we're going to get back to this dua, inshallah, towards the end of the presentation, but I wanted to start off with the blessing of the Quran, inshallah, for in order to like bring that light to our gathering this morning, alhamdulillah. Okay, so this presentation is being given from the perspective of the Islamic school. And, you know, an Islamic school is not just, you know, a building. It's not just a place where we want to give degrees to students and get them into good universities. The idea is that there's a soul behind the school, and there's a greater purpose. We're looking at trying to bring the light of Allah, the light of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, to our next generation. And one of the things that's become clear to all the Islamic schools that have a greater mission and purpose is that the parents cannot, and the families who are part of this, they cannot be on the outside. They have to be part of this same mission. Otherwise, the project only has a limited success. And that's kind of the purpose behind why, you know, we're having, you know, early into the school year, we're having a series of educational seminars for the parents. And it's because we need to be working together, and we need an opportunity to be able to share what are those concerns, you know, where are we seeing like that the biggest areas where we feel like parents could step in and help out in terms of achieving and working towards this common mission that we have. Now, this is something, of course, which is of interest to parents, even those who don't have their kids in Islamic schools, because after all, we all have the same common mission, which is to raise our children in a way that they have taqwa, to raise our children in a way that they have love of the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, to raise our children so that they will be abd of Allah, a servant of Allah, and inshallah those who prepare themselves to be the helpers of the Imam of the time. So this is something which we've offered for everyone, and inshallah everyone can benefit from these reminders and from this knowledge. Now, when we look at some of the areas of concern for parents during the pandemic, there's a lot of them, but it's these that inshallah I would like to focus on in today's presentation. So the first one that I'm going to be discussing is the idea of disaster, stress, or fatigue, meaning that when you know somebody is faced with a major disaster or a major catastrophe or a trial, there comes a certain time where they can just give up on the whole thing. It's like, okay, you know, I'm done with it. And then all those kind of like the whole purpose behind that, it might be lost. And so I'm going to be addressing that, inshallah. Another concern that some parents are seeing is, you know, from their children, aggressive behavior, the children are acting up. In some cases, children are depressed. And so we want to look at some of the potential causes behind that and what we can do about that. And then one of the other areas of concern for parents is the area of like the long-term effect on family dynamics. Some families are really struggling there's a concern like what's going to happen, what's happening right now and what's going to happen in the long run in terms of the relationships. There's a concern about screen time for sure, especially because, you know, now we're telling our children that, you know, you have to sit at a screen and you just spend hours and hours in front of that screen. What kind of impact is that having on them when it comes to like their consumption of media? And this particular thing is so important for us to focus on and to be aware of, that we actually have two more seminars that are primarily dedicated to that issue of talking about video games and social media and screens and shows. And it's something which is of great concern to us as educators and those who are involved with the tarbiyah of our children. So in today's presentation, I'm going to touch on it, but really like I have a lot to share about that, especially kind of given what's happened in the last few months and the feedback that I'm getting from teachers in our school and in parents even outside of the school. So inshallah, that's something just to put on your radar for now. The issue of loneliness, the impact on learning, of being, you know, distance learning and remote learning, like what's happening and how is it impacting the children, physical health and spiritual health. Those are some of the areas of concern. I'll be touching on them a little bit, some of them more than the others. Some of them will just be like a mention and then maybe in the Q&A or if people want to share some thoughts after the presentation, inshallah, we can discuss those further. So let's go ahead and discuss the first one. So, you know, we have parents who ever since February, March have been asked to take on more roles than they usually take on. They are cooking. They are cooking more than they had to before in some cases. They are entertaining. They are playing the role of co-teachers and so many other things. And oftentimes, it can be the case that as parents, we're like, okay, when is this going to end? And sometimes we're like, okay, I'm going to throw in the towel now. I'm done with this. You know, like, let's go just order pizza and forget all the rules and do whatever you want. And, you know, we'll just kind of close our eyes and wait till the whole thing ends. That's not what we want to be doing. We have to make sure that we're aware that this is something that is a real problem, the idea of COVID fatigue or pandemic fatigue. And we want to make sure that we proactively deal with this. Now, it's interesting when in academia, they study what happens when disasters take place. Like, let's say there's a major flood in a city or there's a like wildfires or tsunami or something like that. Typically, what happens is like just looking at what happens to people's emotions. Initially, everyone is like on overdrive. They're like excited, you know, and excited, not in a, I mean, they're obviously it's bad from one perspective, of course, you know, people have lost life and they've lost homes and everything. But in a way that there's a type of excitement for the survivors because they're like, oh, let's come together and, you know, let's pray for each other. Let's, you know, see what we can do to get out in the streets and help those in need. And then there's those heroes who step forward and, you know, they do things for everyone. You know, they get highlighted. The community comes together to support one another. But then typically there's a big phase of disillusionment about half a year after that disaster takes place. And then people are emotionally at a very low place. Now, this is a dangerous area to be in. This is where you have, you know, people who might commit acts of like self-violence. They might harm others because of their emotional states. And then there's a period of rebuilding that takes place. Now, in some cases, people are able to come to terms with what happens. In other cases, these events leave a lifelong scar on somebody's emotional state. But that's looking at things from a perspective of like psychology, and it's not taking into account the spiritual perspective. Like, what's happening to the soul when a major trial happens? So I'm putting this up here because, you know, if you look at the timing, September was about 6 months into the pandemic, and now we're coming on October, November. And I think all of us are feeling this. It's like, okay, well, you know, enough already. I'm sick of the mask. I'm sick of the earphones. I'm just, you know, and in some cases we're seeing that people seem to be giving up. And unfortunately, like some of the decisions that are being made might actually end up having a long-term negative effect on our families and on our children. So this is what I really want to highlight for all of us. And I want us to think about that. How should we be dealing with this type of event? So for this, I want to, you know, we have incredible guidance from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam about what we should be doing. Look at like the positive approach that the Ahlul Bayt described for us when it comes to trials. Imam Ali alayhi salam, when a misfortune descends upon you, look carefully and see if you have a solution. If you have a solution, don't be weak. Don't be lazy and weak and say that, okay, now that this happened, I can't do anything. No, go ahead, go forward, be strong. And then those parts of it that you don't have a solution for, don't be stressed out about it. You know, after all, like, you know, you're not asked to do more than what you can. In another hadith, know that the way out lies in one of two things. Whatever strategy that you have available to you, execute it. And where you can't do anything, then persevere. And then Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, you know, he used to have a lot of trials and difficulties. And look at the way that he responds. He's like, Alhamdulillah, all praise belongs to Allah. He could have made that trial come into my practice of religion. Like, let's say I wake up one day and I have a pandemic when it comes to my salah. You know, I mean, there are people who, like, you know, people who, for example, they lose that passion for prayer. They lose the passion for the Quran. They don't feel that connection to Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. But let's say that those are things are there, but I happen to have lost, you know, and facing difficulties when it comes to other things. Okay, well, he sees that Alhamdulillah for that. Alhamdulillah for the one who did not make this difficulty greater than what it was. And all praise to him for what he wanted to happen, and it happened. So if we want to summarize that, we see that the Ahlul Bayt are saying that in times of difficulty, there's what we need to have is active patience, like sabr, but sabr in an active way, where we're still trying to understand, okay, given the change in circumstances, what is it that, how can I still be busy? And those things that God has given me, I want to make sure that I'm making use of them. But it's not just sabr. There's another word in Arabic, which is istibar, which is from the same root, which is, if you take the concept of sabr can be there for, let's say, a day or two, but the idea of in the long run, I'm there for the marathon. I'm not just there for the sprint. That's something which we also find in the guidance of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. The concept of tawheed, that everything is from Allah, even those things that we'd find unpleasant, this is part of the tadbir and part of the management that God has of the universe. There's wisdom behind everything that he does. The idea of thankfulness for everything that we do have. The idea of positive thinking that, okay, I know that there will be an end to this, and I know that things could be worse. And the idea of acceptance. So if we look at the pictures here, you know, you have some people who you know, they're just like, okay, I'm done. I'm, you know, I can't deal with this anymore. And then you have the idea of like, okay, fine. You know, I'm going to mask up. I'm going to go ahead and do what I need to do. And, you know, I'm feeling happy with the blessings of Allah. Now I'm saying this to myself and all of my fellow parents, because at the end of the day, you know, our children are taking a lot of cues from us. And if there's anything that we can teach them, it's that's a valuable lesson for them, is that how do you deal with bala in life? Because the life of a believer is always going to be filled with bala. Bala is going to pour down upon them. That's the nature of what life in this world is about. So let's take advantage of this to model what it is that we want for our children. Now, when it comes to a practical checklist, you know, I don't want to just talk theory. I want to talk about practically speaking. As a parent, what are some of the things that you can be asking yourself about? First of all, how has the pandemic impacted my own faith, my ability to endure, my sabr, my akhlaq, my ibadah? Right? This is something which is something worth looking at. Like now, after these 6 months, or now it's been like, let's say 8 months, what's happened to these things? You know, do I find that I'm in more control of myself? Do I find that I have more reliance on Allah? I have more of an acknowledgement of His greatness and, you know, His power over my life. Have I been working on polishing my akhlaq now that I have so many more opportunities to, for my, you know, kind of anger to be provoked and my temper, to lose my temper, given that we're in such close quarters? My ibadah, have I, you know, now that I might, let's say I might, for some of us at least, you know, maybe some of us, we have less time, some of us maybe have a little bit more time. Have we tried to focus that in terms of working on our relationship with Allah? Second thing is, what have I turned to in times of desperation? Like, is my outlet in this, in the pandemic, is it Netflix? Right? Is it, you know, like my, is it TikTok? Right? Or is it dua? Right? Is it munajat? Right? Is it going into sajda and just telling Allah, Allah, I'm overwhelmed. Rabbi inni maghlubun fantasir. I don't know what to do. In some cases, it's like, I just don't know what to do. Right? Now, the next thing, and the third point here, and this is really my sincere request to all, you know, the parents, is to think about this, that brothers and sisters, the decisions I'm making for my children, have they been in the best interest of their dunya and their akhirah? Like, really, like, this is something for us to think about. Like, okay, I understand that, you know, for a lot of us, it's very challenging. But the things that we are, the solutions that we presented for our children to deal with, like, let's say, loneliness, to deal with passing time, are they really in the best interest of the dunya and the akhirah? I'm going to give some specific examples as we go along. But I just want to put that question out there for now. And the last bullet point is that, okay, let's say the pandemic ended tomorrow. Okay, how do I pursue? Will all my trials then disappear? Is everything going to be good then? Actually, it should be the case that, you know, this is a reminder to us that as believers, we always are facing a trial. Like we, you know, it's like those people who say that, you know, like exactly like Dr. Nu pointed out in the earlier seminar that we have, that let's say that the president is Joe Biden. Okay, so are we all going to get, you know, bring out our pom-poms and then say, okay, yes, you know, everything's going to be good for us now, right? I mean, this trial is a trial among many trials. We're at a time where we're in the ghaibah. The imam of our time is not with us. There's a trial of separation from the imam. There's a trial of separation from Allah. There's a hijab that, because of our sins, from us and our creator. These are all things that should be, you know, a part of my routine, to understand that I'm always being tried. And the verse that I want to remind myself of and all of you is the very powerful verse from Surah At-Talaq, where Allah says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim, wa man yattaqillaha yaj'al lahu makhrajan wa yarzuqhu min haythu la yahtasib. As for the one who is God wary, he will make a way out of him and provide for him in a way that he could not imagine." So as a parent, if I'm feeling like I've been put on the spot and I'm feeling like stressed and I'm feeling like challenged right now, my solution that God has given me is to increase my taqwa, to increase my God-wariness. The pandemic will be lifted, but in that process, will I also be lifted? Will I also be raised? Or will it just be the case that it kind of ends and I haven't changed? Okay, so that's something which is about coping with the trials. Now, I want to speak about some more specific things. So the next one is about the importance of parenting even during the pandemic. You know, the topic is parenting during the pandemic, but the point here is about actually parenting. Okay, parenting itself, the idea that as a parent, I am feeling a great sense of responsibility towards making sure that, you know, my children are being attended to, that I'm guiding them, that I'm giving them, you know, I'm allowing them to understand that there's right and there's wrong. I'm directing them. I'm putting restrictions. This is all part of being a parent, basically saying that I am in charge. This is something which, you know, Islam has a lot of emphasis on, that when God gives parents children, he does so with a set of expectations. And there's many traditions about this. Imam Baqir alayhi salam, when a parent presents children to Allah, whom he believes to have status with Allah, the Exalted, those children will shield him from the fire by Allah's permission. The efforts that we put into raising our children, they come back to us. But if somebody doesn't put those efforts in and they say that, okay, well, I'm just going to let my children be, I'll give them a place to live, I'll give them food to eat, I'll give them an education, but that's pretty much it, they're on their own, that person is not doing, they're not fulfilling the rights that the children have on them. So this is a reminder for us, you know, and I know that parents, many parents, all of you, alhamdulillah, to some extent, to whatever extent, are putting in even more effort than before. But this is a reminder to us that we do have a responsibility here. And I'm going to give specific examples of some of the things that have been brought to my attention in, you know, the larger community, whether it be locally, whether it be in the school locally, or whether it be in larger community, things that we have noticed. So here, there's an emphasis that we need to have particularly on routines, on rituals, and on rules. Okay, this is part of what parenting is about. Sometimes parents, you know, they have this sense of like, okay, well, now that, especially now that my children aren't meeting with others, I need to be in their best books, and therefore I need to relax on all these type of things. Just let my children do what I want, and then they won't, you know, they won't ever show any negative behavior to me. If I give them whatever, then there's going to be no conflict, so that's the best way out. That's not the way to deal with it. Having a conflict of wills and having, like, you know, disagreements and having, like, the children sometimes not, you know, like what the parents are asking them to do is perfectly normal. It's part of, you know, the job of growing up. It's part of, you know, children being children and parents being parents. The idea that parents are going to be the best friends of their children and they're going to, like, be at their level, like, in every way whatsoever, that's not an Islamic concept. It's not a concept that makes sense even, you know, for people who just look at things in a common sense perspective. So part of being a parent is knowing when to be friendly and when to play and when to, like, you know, when to, like, let the child take the lead. But part of it is also knowing when to take charge. So specifically, as a checklist, number one is, do my children have a bedtime? This is something which saddens me very, very much. You know, when sometimes I will talk to students and I see that, you know, they're yawning at 9:30 in the morning. Okay, they are looking tired, you know, at 11 o'clock. You know, for example, a middle school student who should be a bundle of energy doesn't have energy to, like, run from one side of the field to the other side of the field. Well, then I ask them, what time do you sleep? Oh, I don't know, you know, like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. Okay, this, brothers and sisters, is a type of zulm and injustice the parents are doing to their children. Parents think that, oh no, we have to take it easy on our children, you know, let them be their own masters. You know, we know that they know best what's best for them. No, Allah Ta'ala has given that wisdom to the parents to be able to impart for the children. So if you talk to any medical professional, if you talk to anybody who's in tarbiyah, they'll say that one of the key things that parents need to do is to establish a bedtime for children. Okay, now, not only have a bedtime, but ensuring the children get enough sleep. You know, if you look at the recommendations for how much sleep they will get, and then you compare how much sleep they should get, and you compare it to the amount of sleep that your children are getting, if the children are not getting enough sleep, then this is something that is going to affect their development. It's going to affect their academic performance. It's going to affect their spiritual performance. It's going to affect their behavior. Okay, it's going to affect their diet. Like one of the things that, you know, some of the researchers have pointed out is that sleep consists of four different segments. And it's the last segment of sleep, which is the most important. And if that part is disturbed, if the children don't get that last part of their sleep, then it's going to affect their behavior. It's going to affect their ability to think clearly. And it's going to affect their diet as well, too. So that leads to my next point, which is that do my children have eat nutritious, healthy meals? Here, brothers and sisters, you know, like especially I want to emphasize breakfast here. Many medical professionals say that breakfast is the most important meal for the day in terms of performance, in terms of, you know, academics, in terms of like well-being, health. Islamically speaking, the two meals that are emphasized more than the others is the breakfast and the dinner. And so it's extremely important. And this is very saddening to me, again, when I find out that children are being sent to school or they're starting their classes online when they haven't had breakfast. We can talk about Tawheed and, you know, the beauties of the Ahlul Bayt in the Quran as much as we want to, but if a child hasn't had breakfast, these things don't, you know, have as much impact because they don't have the ability to take these in. And, you know, it's sad sometimes when the teachers will see that the students are acting up and they ask them like, why? And they're hungry. And then sometimes when it's like, let's say, what do you have to eat? Well, it's like a bag of chips or it's like a small, you know, tub of yogurt that they don't want to even eat. Well, that's doing an injustice, even a greater injustice to our children. So one of the other causes for this is when we don't have a routine around meal times. Because if the children are used to like just taking a little bit here and there, you know, the whole day, like in between, let's say every snack time, every break time, they just grab a bit here and there and they kind of like eat that way. Well, then of course they're not going to feel hungry at meal times. But this is contrary to all advice that, you know, good medical professionals give. It's contrary to the Islamic advice about health and well-being. It's meal times are very important. Snacking out of meal times is not something, especially, you know, when it's not just a light thing, it's to be avoided. So we need to have rules and expectations around screen time, snacking, physical exercise. You know, this is very important. It's sometimes you can see that children are not getting enough time outdoors. They're not getting enough physical exercise. It's taking a toll on them. The idea of changing clothes and getting out of pajamas and not just spending the time just at home the whole time like that. The idea of bedtime around salah as well too. Am I as a parent aware of the dangers of excessive screen time? You know, like there's one time where a screen is required in order to for a child to take a class remotely. But that doesn't mean that now it doesn't translate into an open season then that children should just be given at any time access to a screen. Do I have limits on device ownership and usage? Or have I just said that, okay, now that we're in COVID, now I have to give my children their own device and they can do whatever they want with it. They can even take it into the bedroom. These are things that we're going to be talking about more inshallah in the next couple upcoming seminars. Do I do spot checks on what's going on with my child online? I know that many parents are working at home, they have meetings, they have different things they're working on, but they can still, you know, take a break once in a while and just walk in and just check and just see what is my child doing. And in fact, now it's an added bonus, you know, that as a parent, you can be more aware of what's actually going on in the classroom and what children are doing. Before, you didn't have a camera into your child's classroom. Maybe it would have been illegal to do that, but now it's the norm. So it's a wonderful way of getting more involved in a children's education and being able to help. And, you know, studies have showed that on an academic level, the biggest factor of academic success for children is the support that they get from their parents. The school can be doing its utmost, but if the parents aren't also involved academically, then the school can only do so much. And the final point is that, am I a good role model for my children in all these areas when it comes to routines, when it comes to sleep, when it comes to eating healthy? Sometimes, you know, like just as a thing of, you know, like 9 p.m. is the time to remove your day pajamas and to put your night pajamas on. And this is not just a meme. Like some of my friends have actually, you know, shared that, you know, it's like, oh, I had to actually get out and I had to shave, you know, I had to clean up my, trim my beard. I had to like put on my, I didn't have clothes to wear anymore because I'm so used to wearing my home clothes. Well, when we don't have those routines that we're establishing for ourselves, you know, if we're not, you know, taking care of these type of things, then our children will kind of also feel like falling into sloth and just like not really being organized and disciplined. Okay, so that is the second point. First, we talked about like dealing with bala. The second thing we talked about is having routines and parenting. The third point is the importance of having tranquility in the family. Allah Ta'ala in the Quran says that the purpose behind forming a family is لِتَسْكُنُوا إِلَيْهَا, that the two parents can have tranquility and comfort in themselves. And this is one of the hallmarks of a family. And it's one of the, it's magic that takes place when things are done correctly. One time somebody came to the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and he says that, I'm just in wonder. He was just reflecting. He said, I'm in wonder how, you know, you can have two people who come from different backgrounds and, you know, who have different personalities, how, I'm paraphrasing, how they can come together and then live together for the rest of their lives. And so the Prophet reminded him and said that, well, have you not read this verse where Allah says that وَجَعَلَ بَيْنَكُمْ مَوَدَّةً وَرَحْمَةً, that he places mercy and affection between you, meaning that this is one of the gifts that God gives to a family. But as we know, oftentimes in families, the reality is different than what is mentioned in this verse. So this verse becomes kind of like a goal that we want to achieve. We want to be able to earn that divine gift. And so one thing we can ask ourselves is that, what is it like in our family? You know, normally and at these times, you know, is it the case that, yeah, we're that type of family that we just love spending time with each other? You know, we do the board game thing, you know, we do the weekend retreat thing, we do the walk in the park, you know, we go hiking the mountains. Or are we a family where we're together, but, you know, actually we're not together? Our lives are spent, you know, virtually apart from one another. Like here, even the cat is doing its own thing. Or are we a family where we're together, where, you know, things are always in conflict and people are always shouting each other? Maybe in the pandemics, it's gotten even worse. Or in some cases, you know, the family is not together, right? And this is a reality that we need to deal with. Whatever we do have, though, obviously we want to preserve it. And we want to make sure that we're working towards improving it. There's always room for improvement. So at this time, brothers and sisters, like there's a need to like look within all of us, and I'm saying this to myself first and foremost, to see how can we have greater understanding, love and compassion and appreciation for one another. It's really like something, I know that all of us are going through one struggle or another, but it's really like something that we need to realize it's not just us, there's others as well too. For example, you know, let's say in a typical family, of course, there might be families that are organized in a different way, but let's say the demand for the responsibility of cooking falls primarily on the mother in your home. Now, maybe, you know, the mother is not used to having like children, you know, who are there the whole day, and they might need more food than usual, or they might need it at different times. And maybe she's not used to doing that and working a full-time job at the same time. Maybe she's not used to having a grown man who's at home the whole day. I mean, after all, you know, it's one thing to have a guy, you know, guys, you know, have certain things about them, and, you know, they tend to be kind of demanding, right? So it's one thing to have the guy there, okay, in the morning, and then back in the evening, okay, we can deal with that. But now the whole day, it's like, okay, well, when do I get my own time? Right? When do I get my personal time? So these are things that we have to like understand, that we have to have greater tolerance. And these things, when we have an environment where the type of tranquility is being exuded from the hearts of the parents, this will have a huge impact on the children. Sometimes like they are acting up because they're actually going through a type of trauma. They're feeling like they don't have roots. They're feeling like hopeless, but they don't know how to express it except for in terms of like just a lot of complaints, a lot of negativity. This is from the children. So one thing we can look at is what type of environment are we creating from our hearts? There's a unique demand on fathers as well too, where sometimes they're being asked to, you know, working from home, you know, it's sometimes not, it's quite challenging. Maybe we don't have a proper space, you know, there's sound here and there, and then there's playing double duty of like parenting and everything. So it can be quite difficult. So the other point I want to say is that, you know, here we have an opportunity to, I use the word opportunity a lot, but anyway, there's more chance here to succeed and to fail and to build relationship with our spouse and children. You know, maybe in the past we had less interaction. So there's less practical circumstances that come up. But now it's like every day, you know, every day we have an opportunity to control our temper. Every day we have an opportunity to like crack a joke in as a way of lightening the mood. Every day we have the opportunity of responding to negativity with positivity. Every day we have a chance to reflect on like what's working and to like kind of improve on that and to identify what's not working and to like address that. So this is like in one, maybe a year of pandemic, we can have a lifetime of improvement or even more when it comes to our family relationships. It's all been put in front of us. So it should be seen as an opportunity, even despite the challenge. And then we want to make sure we practice healthy family building techniques as well. And so some suggestions, again, back to the checklist. Do I try to spend quality time with my children? Yes, we might be together in the same home, but are we together? You know, am I putting aside my device? Am I saying, okay, let's go out, let's take a walk, let's go to the playground, let's do this, let's play, throw on the ball, whatever it is that we want to do. Let's talk. Do we eat at least one meal together as a family every day? Now, sometimes we can't, right? It's just not possible. But where we can, okay, do we do that? Do we eat with devices off and put aside? Do we try to create a warm atmosphere at home? Do I thank my spouse for the extra efforts that are taking? Like maybe give them some flowers, because I knew I was giving the seminar today. I actually went to the store to buy some flowers last night. I didn't want to be a hypocrite, but I just couldn't find the right thing. So inshallah, that's going to be a rain check for my family here. Do I present a united front and support sincere efforts from my school's admin and teachers? Brothers and sisters, one of the ways of creating a negative experience for our children is when we as parents were always at war with the school. We're like, oh, you know, like this, the teacher's like that, the admin's like that. What is this? And then it's like, there's already enough stress with the remote learning that is taking place. And now we're going to add that as well, you know, as parents. These type of things can have really negative impacts on the children. They can get like super negative about just the whole process of learning. As it is, learning is not going on in the ideal way of like where somebody's in the presence of the teacher and they're in that learning atmosphere. So we need to really be positive. Yes, there might be some feedback that needs to be given, but that should be given in the right way. And parents should be partnering with the school and trying to present that united front. Okay, great. So we've covered a few topics. I have a few more left, inshallah. And then inshallah, we're gonna be opening up for any questions or comments. And so the next topic is that of loneliness. You know, here we have, this just a cartoon capturing some of the things that I'm sure that our children are seeing, or maybe they're not seeing, but they're not expressing verbally, but maybe they're showing in their behavior. It's like, okay, when is it going to end? You know, I'm bored. You know, like it's not fun for kids, especially those who are active, to sit in front of a screen and to like be learn about, you know, whatever, you know, it's tough, you know, and I miss my friends, right? These are things which is a reality. And one of the concerns that I think all of us have is that what is going to be the long-term social impact on our children? Maybe some of those social skills that the younger children were in the process of developing in the previous years, now as parents, we're seeing that they've lost some of those things. So this is a concern. So what can we do about that? What I'd like to do here, brothers and sisters, is I want to show you a short clip from a medical doctor. His name is Dr. Leonard Sachs. He gave this talk just a few weeks back. And in it, he talks about the concept of safety of children and what does it mean to care about our children being safe? And where is it that we can come to a healthy balance? Now, he's not just somebody who's done theoretical work in psychology. He's actually a practicing medical doctor, and he sees patients. And one of the things about him is that, you know, he's not he's not Muslim, but he's a very popular speaker in different Muslim institutions in North America, because he does approach things from a more conservative religious perspective. I think he's a Jewish, he belongs to the Jewish faith, but his approach is one of values and of like believing in the role of parents as doing tarbiyah, not just, you know, people who like let their children just go free. So overall, a lot of his ideas are in line with our teachings. Of course, some of the things may not be 100% aligned, but this segment I found interesting, and I didn't want to speak on this. And I'm not informing parents here what they should do. I'm just providing an opportunity for them to have access to this useful perspective. This is a short clip of about 4 to 5 minutes. And I think it is something which inshallah will be eye-opening for all of us. We may not agree with what he's saying, but it is worth listening to this. So just as an introduction, he had up until this point, you know, he had talked about his experience in going to schools in Germany, where they're experimenting in having schools for younger children in the forest, where they actually teach them how to do things like cut down trees and like build furniture. And he's saying that in Germany, he saw how they give like knives and saws to children who are young, and there's danger involved. They climb trees, there's danger involved, but these are things which actually help build their character. So let's see what he has to say. How does he relate to this to the topic of parenting during the pandemic?
In forest, this is not a structured playground. Using sharp knives to cut wood. So Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff have written about what they call the culture of safety-ism. What they mean by the culture of safety-ism is the belief that if any kid might get hurt, then no child can participate. Don't do that, you might get hurt. And the result, as these and other scholars have shown, is kids who are risk averse, kids who are afraid to take risks, and also parents and teachers who are risk averse. If a child has spent their early years climbing trees and cutting wood with sharp knives, they have learned, yeah, I might get hurt, but I can handle that. I am not afraid. I have a photograph of my own daughter. When she was very young, she was at the top of a jungle gym and fell 9 foot onto the ground and sustained a non-displaced fracture of her distal radius. And I have a photograph of her with her cast on, which I applied, admiring her cast, admiring my handiwork. And I think that was a great experience for her, because she learned, yeah, I might get hurt, but I'm not afraid. I can do a 9-foot jungle gym, not a 50-foot jungle gym, because then I might die, but a 9-foot jungle gym I can handle. Learning to judge risk is what childhood play ought to be about. And you know, as a family doctor, I've had so many parents, and in urgent care, very often I see a child who is injured and the parents are furious. They're like, my kid fell and sprained their ankle. I'm like, yeah, okay. She's going to be fine. I'm going to teach you how to care for her ankle and ensure 100% healing. But you know what? If your kid goes through childhood and never sprains an ankle, that's not a good thing. Ellen Sensater and her colleagues in Europe have found that kids who have had those appropriately dangerous experiences, climbing a tree, cutting a piece of wood with a knife, the term they use is antiphobic. These kids subsequently are less likely to be afraid. You don't want to raise a child who is fearful. You want to raise a child who can judge risk and who has the courage to take appropriate risk. American kids increasingly are reared in this culture of safetyism. Don't do that, you might get hurt. And they're staying home and playing games in their bedroom. That's not a good thing. The culture of safetyism, the idea that if any kid might get hurt, then no child should participate, The result of that child is kids who are risk averse, kids who are afraid to venture out. As I mentioned earlier, I am medical director of a facility where we have diagnosed over 140 proven cases of coronavirus, COVID-19. I will share something personal with you. I'm 60 years old. I am overweight and I have high blood pressure. That's four major risk factors for bad outcomes if I should get sick with the coronavirus, which I have not yet had. Age over 50, male rather than female, overweight, high blood pressure, four major risk factors. But I go to work every day that I'm scheduled to work, and I work full time. I wear appropriate personal protective equipment. I wear a mask. My daughter's school is open with appropriate social distancing. The kids and teachers wear masks. And it's a small class size, but I concur and accept their decision, and I've spoken with the leadership of the school, and they are well aware of all the risks, and they are very careful to ensure safety to the extent that it is possible. But the goal of 100% safety is not a reasonable goal. If you insist on 100% safety, you would never leave your home. There's risk in driving a car. Look, I'm hearing from some parents who say, if there's any possibility my kid might get sick, then my kid's not leaving home. Life is all about judging risks and benefits. If you insist on 100% safety, if you say to your kid, no, you're not allowed to do that because you might get sick, you are raising a fearful and risk-averse child. Don't do that. You want to teach your child to have courage. Courage doesn't mean that you ignore the risk. I do not ignore the risk. I'm a practicing physician. I have seen this disease, this COVID-19. I recognize the risk. I prepare for the risk, and I move forward.
Okay, so that is a perspective. I personally found it useful. And you know, sometimes everyone wants the best for their children, but this wanting sometimes, you know, it can be something which blinds us from looking at things in a holistic way. Let's say, for example, that somebody is looking at this thing and their only focus is, okay, I don't want my child to get coronavirus. Well, nobody does. But in the meantime, let's say I'm locking them up at home. I'm not taking them even to those things which, you know, medical professionals say that, okay, these are generally safe. They're not 100%, but they're generally safe. Well, what is the long-term impacts of that going to be on their mental health? Like when it comes to like their social development, these are things which need to be looked at, you know, when it comes to like even let's say their physical health. Now, everyone has to make their own decision. Everyone has their own unique circumstances. And, you know, we're not here to say that this is right or wrong in your personal circumstances, but just to kind of get us to think. Now, on a practical So inshallah, on a practical level, I do have some things to offer in this regard about when it comes to safety, when it comes to like, you know, loneliness. But inshallah, I'm going to mention that as part of the next topic. And I think that's going to be the last topic that we cover as part of the formal presentation. And that's a topic of spiritual health. So for this, I want to actually mention that, you know, like the topic of where sometimes, you know, because of the circumstances that we're in, we tend to, you know, let's say, ease up, and we tend to like not hold ourselves to the standard that we ought to be holding ourselves to. And so one of the risks of the pandemic is the risk of laziness, of just becoming lazy people, of becoming complacent people. Just kicking back and saying that, okay, since we're at home, let's act like we're home, and we're always at home. Okay, so this hadith of Imam Baqir alayhi salam, you know, I loathe the man who is lazy about his worldly affairs. Whoever is lazy about the affairs of his world will be even more lazy about the affairs of the hereafter. So on a practical level, we have to realize that Islam as a general and a religion in general, for everything that we have, there's always a way of accomplishing it, or at least attending to it, even when you're in a special circumstance. So let's say we look at prayers. Okay, somebody, let's say, is in, you know, in the Quran it mentions that somebody's in a state of fear against the enemy who's coming to attack. So do you just give up the prayers? No, you go ahead and you do your prayer, but you do it, let's say, when you're on horseback and, you know, while you're, you have some people who are guarding against the enemy, and then you take places. Okay, let's say that you're traveling, you know, and your prayers, you're traveling and you know, your prayers are going to become qada, or, you know, maybe they're not going to become qada, but, you know, now you're moving. Are you still allowed to pray? Yes, there's always circumstances. There's always conditions, and there's exceptions to the norm. Fasting, similarly, somebody can't fast. Okay, well, they give charity, for example, a certain amount, and they make it up later on. And charity, everything, all of them have alternates when they can't be performed as normal. However, the exceptions should not become the norm. Okay, yes, you can eat your grapefruits, but, you know, don't forget about the oranges. Okay, whatever you want to say. So, for example, we have a hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, Muhammad ibn Muslim, one of the companions, says that I asked him about a man who entered the state of impurity while traveling, and, you know, needed to, like, you know, do, like, let's say, wudu or ghusl, but he couldn't find anything but snow and ice. So Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says that he's in a state of compulsion and should perform tayammum, because we can't do wudu with snow. Yes, if you melt the snow and it becomes water, then you could, but let's say it's so cold, you can't do that. So he says, okay, let him do tayammum, but I would not want him to return to that land again in which his practice of faith is destroyed. Perhaps one of the takeaways we can come up with from this hadith is that when we have something to do in Islam and we come up with an excuse, and it's a valid excuse, fine, go ahead. You know, don't do the way, you know, as normally you would do, but don't let that become the norm as well. So this is something that we have to be aware of, that at these times, it could be the case that some of the very good habits that we may have developed before the pandemic, that the foundation of them and the value of them could crumble if we don't take care as parents to make sure that we're giving the proper attention to things that we ought to. And remember that what we do in these special times will leave a long-term impact on our children. I don't know if it's something that you as parents have experienced, but I know for myself, there are certain things that we might do, let's say when we go on a trip, or let's say there's one night where the electricity is not on at home. My children will remember those things a lot more than they remember things when it's just normal. So those things that we do right now during these months or these year or two, they are going to be remembered by our children. So we have to see for ourselves that what are we going to give importance to, and what are we just going to give up and just say that, okay, well, because it's not there, you know, we're going to let it go. So in this regard, first of all, let's say that there are in-person programs being designed with safety in mind. Maybe, you know, it's being offered at the local center. Maybe it's being offered at, you know, let's say that you are going to an in-person school, or your children are enrolled in an in-person school, then maybe the school is offering some programs. For example, here in Rise Academy, the physical school, on Fridays, there are special programs for middle school students and for high school students. During the week, you know, depending on the situation, there's programs and there's opportunities for children to come in person. So if there's no other, like, what is the reason for why I don't take advantage of it? Is it something which is a valid reason? Or is it something where it's, let's say, I just couldn't be bothered? You know, that I'm used to not getting out and having a routine, then it's better just to stay that way. I have to ask myself, well, what's going to be the long-term impact of that? Let's say that the center is offering a program outdoors. Now, you know, that environment, what I experienced, you know, is that that it was a very powerful feeling to, like, for everyone to be gathered outdoors. In a way, sometimes it was nicer than, in some ways it was nicer than being all indoors. You know, everyone's together. It was a beautiful feeling, you know, in the number of programs that we had in the parking lot at the local center. And these are things which, you know, it seems like a shame to give up for no valid reason. Do I take advantage of the sudden global access to knowledge? Now that, you know, suddenly, like, you have all these scholars in a whole bunch of disciplines offering lectures and seminars and webinars for free. Am I taking advantage of that? what are our family spiritual rituals? You know, is our spiritual ritual just that, you know, the TV is on for, let's say, the Thursday program and everyone's just doing whatever they're doing? Or do we actually make a point of making it like be something that, you know, it's like a routine, like going to clear out all the other distractions or paying attention to it? Do we have other rituals that we do? For example, some of the families, they make a point in these days to have a Quran jalasa. They started in the month of Ramadan, they're continuing, where they all take turns reading Quran, one ayah each. Some of the families, after they pray together. And then after their prayer, each one goes around and makes a special dua. Or each one goes around and they say what they're thankful for that day. These small, they don't take a amount of time, but these small rituals can really drive home that point to our children that in these times, we have to be even more, you know, inclined towards dua and worship. And how are we being a true friend to other believers? You know, a lot of people are going through need, and sometimes, you know, we hear stories. I mean, we don't see them that much, but we hear about people who are really suffering right now. They need somebody to reach out to them and just ask them how they're doing. They need someone to talk to. So are we doing that? Are we keeping tabs of the affairs of others? Do we try to arrange for safe opportunities for our children to meet other children? Again, keeping safety in mind, but according to the guidelines that are there, these are things which are important, and you know they will have an impact on this, on the spiritual health of our children. So just in summary, you know, we identified some areas of concern that are coming up, and especially now that the pandemic has been here for a number of months. And then we talked about some of the practical solutions that I'm sure that a lot of us are already applying, but it's a good reminder and encouragement to continue that, and maybe some tools and solutions and strategies that we weren't aware of. These include things like making sure that we have a type of spiritual acceptance and we're using the bala in a way to be conditioned by Allah and to grow closer to Him. The not letting up on being a parent, focusing on allowing Allah's gift of tranquility and sakina and sukoon to be present in my family, acknowledging the toll it's taking on my children and taking positive steps to address their loneliness, and then having attention to our spiritual health. So I just finally want to go back and revisit this verse here from the Quran, where Allah quotes, you know, these soldiers who are making this dua, رَبَّنَا أَفْرِغْ عَلَيْنَا صَبْرًا وَثَبِّتْ أَقْدَامَنَا وَانْصُرْنَا عَلَى الْقَوْمِ الْكَافِرِينَ. Inshallah, we hope that all the trials that we're facing, whether it be the trial of the ghaiba of the imam of our time, whether it be the trial of the effects of our sins, whether it be the trial of the pandemic, and let's say the concerns we have, health concerns, you know, other concerns for our children, raising our children in this society, whatever it may be, that all these trials, that we can have active sabr during them, that we can persevere, and that we can realize that we have a greater mission that's in front of us. وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله الطاهرين. Okay, so thank you very much for everyone's participation. At this point, I'll ask Sister Sabath to, inshallah, conduct the rest of the program.
Thank you, Sheikh Saleem, for the great presentation. It's always amazing to sit through your sessions and get some valuable insight on a lot of issues that we face every day. This event is sponsored by Rise Education System, which is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Rise Education System currently has two branches. One is Rise Academy, which is a face-to-face school in San Jose, California, and Rise Online, which is nationwide in North America. The system is aiming to go global, inshallah, soon. And the goal for Rise Education System is to create a global community of learners, inshallah. This was part one of a series of parenting seminars, inshallah, that we will be offering, led by Sheikh Saleem. The schedule is on the screen for the upcoming seminars and the topics it's going to include. The next one, inshallah, will be November 21st, and our aim is to be able to live stream it on YouTube for greater audience. We will open up for Q&A Now, if that's okay, Sheikh Salim, we have, we will take your comments on YouTube and on Zoom, whichever mode you guys are on it right now. I already have a few. Let me give you the questions that we have so far. Some comments that we have on YouTube is, thank you for the session. It is so amazing and informative. There are some questions and queries about the video being shared. It is going to be available on our YouTube channel. There is a question about, can the slides be shared?
Yeah, sure, inshallah.
Okay, I will have to, sorry, stop sharing that flyer because for some reason I cannot see my chat. There is a question about, can I ask about putting kids in nursery and your thoughts on this? My daughter is 21 months old and I'm thinking of putting her in nursery for 2 mornings a week, but worried about the impact it might have on her.
Yeah, okay, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So generally speaking, at that age, in those youngest years of a child's development, the best environment for them to be raised is their home environment, and to have attention from their parents, in particular the mother. That is the most healthy way of developing, and ensuring like the proper food and the proper environment, the proper love and care and attention is being given to the child in those youngest years. Now, in some cases, there's special circumstances that come up. There's special situations that arise where the parent, you know, realizes that they have to make a choice. And in those cases, you know, they should understand that this guideline for the child to be with the parents and to be with the mother at that time, it's not something which is a wajib obligation, where if they don't do that, they're committing a sin. But it is a guideline, it is a recommendation, it is, you know, the right general approach to take, but there are allowances for exceptions. So maybe there's, you know, everyone has unique life situations which occur, and perhaps they might have an exception where when they analyze it, they say, okay, this is something which is very important for me to attend to, whatever it may be. And therefore, let's say, like as the question posed, two mornings in the week, I want to put my child in nursery. In that case, so they want to make sure that whatever negative effects would happen because of that, that they're addressing them proactively. So, for example, that the nursery they're putting them into should be a place where, you know, the right person is in charge. They're giving them the right care. They're giving the right values. You know, whatever is being fed to them, whatever they're hearing, whatever they're seeing, it's in line with the tarbiyah that the parents would like them to see. Whatever examples they've been giving other children, these are the examples that you know, the parent would be happy for the children to be exposed to. You know, like sometimes that they also have to look at the alternatives. Like maybe there might be a parent, like let's say, you know, a grandparent who would be happy to step up and take care of the child in those 2 mornings. That's much better an option than, let's say, sending to an institution where we're not sure exactly what's going on. But again, every circumstance is different. Now, sometimes it is an institution where, you know, we actually do know what's going on because we're in touch with them. We know who's there. We're always keeping tabs. You know, we've done our research properly and we're sure that, you know, they're doing their best. And then we're going to compensate for this time through, let's say, making sure that on those days, let's say that the child is in the nursery, then we're going to spend even more time with them and give them more love. But again, all these are exceptions, and the default approach should be that, okay, during especially these first 3 years, there should be a particular emphasis on being nurtured in the home environment.
Thank you. The next one is, how can we make sure our kids are not addicted to screen time? Because now they're spending a lot of time on screen, taking classes and completing assignments and taking tests.
Yeah. So it is something that, inshallah, we're going to talk about in detail in the next couple of seminars, because it's one of the main issues that all of us are dealing with. But let me just mention a few high-level points right now. First of all, you know, how do we look at screens and what kind of example do we set for our children, and what kind of place do they have in our lives? One of the authors was saying that, like, you know, when you have a tool like a hammer, you know, what do you do with the tool? When you need to, like, put something up on the wall, you go grab your tool, and then, you know, you use it, you hammer the nail in, right? And then you put it back again, right? You don't walk around the house with the tool looking for nails to nail into the wall. You know, that's not what the purpose of a tool is. So right now, you know, in order to accomplish this objective of learning, we have to use these tools. And, you know, we're forced to do so. But that's what they are. They are tools for learning, for research, for communication, for collaboration, for submitting homework, assignments, whatever it may be. But they are not a piece of clothing that we're wearing and we're just using, you know, the whole day. They're not like a living room where I go to, where I want to live. I don't want to live inside my computer screen or on my computer screen, or I don't want to live in my chat room, whatever it may be. So we have to give the right perspective on that. And that comes about through modeling that behavior for our children. And in terms of how we do it, like, you know, if we ourselves, let's say, you know, the use of screen time is primarily for entertainment, it's primarily for there's no like rules, regulations, then of course, that's going to be something that's going to impact our children. One of the parents was mentioning that in her family, they have this rule that I think she said around like 9 o'clock or 9:30 or 8:30, I forget. She said that all screens are off, no matter what. And then when we end the night, like, you know, we end it without screens. And even though I myself can't do that because of my particular circumstances, I thought that's such a wonderful thing if somebody can do that. Because imagine, you know, the children having that last moments not be in front of a screen. Even one of the things that medical professionals mention when it comes to having better sleep for children is not to give them exposure to screens towards the end of the day. So we need to set the right kind of have the right perhaps approach towards screens and devices. We need to have timings and limits on what's being used and how it's being used. We need to make sure that the devices are being used in a public area where everyone can see what's going on. If they're being used in the room, then they have to be used with very tight controls. And that's something that we're going to be talking about, inshallah, in the upcoming weeks about, you know, monitoring and, you know, let's say when the school provides devices, of course, there already is a type of filtering mechanism that's there and that can be utilized. The idea that we want to make sure that our children are not just glued to the screen. So let's say that there's the 40-minute break here or 1 hour break or 20-minute break, you know, here and there. We want to make sure that we tell our children that during those times, the screen should be shut. I want you to get out. I want you to take a walk. I want you to, like, you know, like talk to people. I want you to, like, you know, not be stuck in front of the screen. These things are super important in terms of, like, you know, getting them to realize that, okay, this is what it is. Now, no matter what we do, we are fighting like a battle here. You know, it's not easy. And it's very hard to, like, kind of, because it's kind of like a bad habit that that the children will fall into. And then it's just there, but we have to actively work at it. With consistency, you know, with kind of having a proper plan in place, with talking about it with our children and saying that this is what we're going to be doing with devices and usage, and this is what the time limits, and this is what's allowed, this is what's not allowed, and monitoring and being fully aware of what's going on, then inshallah, the effects will not be detrimental in the long term. There's also a whole slew of physical problems that can occur, like just staring at a screen, you know, and just being sitting in this posture. And that's why one of the seminars is going to be led by medical professionals in the community. They're going to talk about some of these things. I just wanted to add here that as parents, you know, we you know, sometimes we tend to like take it easy sometimes when it comes to the screen, and we allow things to happen that we would never allow in person. You know, like when, let's say we had, you know, our friends, our children's friend, they were going to come home, let's say, for to talk to our children. We would be really aware of who's coming and what they're going to say, and how long they're going to spend and what they're talking. I mean, it'd be something that we'd be concerned about. We'd be concerned about what food they're going to bring. Let's say they're bringing their own toys or their own food. Well, we would want to be aware of that. But if you think about online, this is what happens. You know, when you have chatting going on, when you have people bringing different ideas to our children, when you have games that are being played, and you know, our children sometimes are playing with strangers, we're allowing things to happen which we would never allow in person. Why are we doing that? Okay, so these are things that we need to really think about. I wanted to keep it short, but I think I went on a little bit longer than I wanted to. Anyway, inshallah.
Thank you for that insight, Sheikh Saleem. There are a few questions here. I don't know if they're relevant or not, so I'll say them, but you can say not relevant and really move to the next. There's one about, what are your thoughts on Umrah Ziyarah during the pandemic in terms of risk versus blessings? I don't know if it's relevant to the seminar.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not qualified to say about the risks part of it. You know, I mean, obviously, like if, you know, the risks are, let's say that somebody determines that there are risks there that are, you know, like considerable risks. Let's say that, but if somebody has this type of thinking, okay, if there's considerable risks, but my desire for thawab, it outweighs those risks. That's not the right way of thinking. You know, that intention that we had, let's say we actually looked into it and we had this intention, like, okay, if the risks are not like, you know, let's say the risks are not considerable, the risks are minimal, then I will go. That intention itself, inshallah, will have the impact of what we're looking for. So we shouldn't kind of think that Allah wants us to put ourselves in danger for extra thawab. But at the same time, for whatever it is, we have to be balanced. And that's why I showed that clip from Dr. Sachs about looking at things in a balanced perspective.
Okay. Then there's a few questions about providing the slides. So this is a live feed on YouTube, and then the video will be up on YouTube eventually. So that would be the best access of getting slides, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's a question on, you mentioned Islam emphasized on breakfast and dinner meals. Can you expand on it a bit more, considering some recommendations from medical perspective have been against eating at night?
Yeah. So this... this particular advice, like it's, you can find it in the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. You can find it in the summary of those traditions that some of the ulama have given when they talk about what is Islamic advice on diet. Now, having dinner doesn't mean that you have to have it right before you go to sleep. In fact, from a medical perspective, eating a heavy meal towards like right before somebody's going to sleep, like pretty much like it seems that our medical professionals have said that that's something which is not recommended. And they say that at least an hour before, you know, you should stop, you should have finished like any heavy meal, if not, you know, 1.5 hours, even 2 hours, sometimes you see that recommendation.
Okay. And then we have a big problem with my teenage daughter and a sleeping routine. She's not listening at all and sleeping not earlier than 12 a.m. She's very sleepy in the mornings and very moody, missing classes. We tried many ways, but the child is very stubborn and not listening. Any recommendations?
Yeah. So a few thoughts on that. You know, the parents, it's good now if they go into detective mode and find out what's going on. And it could be a variety of different causes. And I'm going to mention some potential causes here, but it could be none of these. Okay, so it's important to like, you know, to realize that there's different causes for certain symptoms that are seen. And sometimes it lies in the medical realm to figure it out. Sometimes it lies in the psychological realm. Sometimes it's in the spiritual realm. I'm just going to mention some things that come up. Okay, one of them is a not having like an established routine for how the day should go and what should happen. You know, these are things which parents need to, like it's something which maybe earlier in the development of that child, there's a point where the parents let go on that. And now it's kind of like, you know, they let go of the reins and now the child has run forward and it's really hard to grab onto them again. So the parents do need to grab onto them again, even though it's difficult, with firmness, but also compassion, you know, with, you know, sticking to their principle, with love, but tough love. They need to stick onto that and say that, look, at you're our child. It's because of our love and care for you that you need to follow these routines. When they're used to sleeping late, then obviously it's not going to happen right away where they are going to sleep early. But it's something which, you know, over time, it can fall into place. Also, another thing to look at is, well, if the child is taking naps during the daytime, obviously that's going to have an impact on their being able to sleep early at night. And so, you know, that if they are taking naps, any nap needs to end by, like, let's say 1 o'clock p.m. if they're going to be able to sleep at night at a decent time at night. Also, another thing to look at is diet. Diet can sometimes impact, you know, one's ability to sleep. If certain children are extremely sensitive to caffeine, it's unbelievable. Sometimes you'll look online and you say that, okay, well, how much does caffeine affect? And a lot of people will say that, okay, it doesn't have that much effect, or, you know, it's for a few hours, whatever it is. But I can tell you, like, through experience, that there are children who can be greatly impacted by caffeine. And so looking at, like, what is it that they're eating, like chocolate has caffeine in it, for example, you know, and say coffee, tea, whatever it may be. Another thing is, like, when the brain is very, like, active at night. So, like, that's something that can keep the body awake. And so, you know, video games, screen time, screens. Unfortunately, I want to mention something here that, and this is through experience, you know, that sometimes parents become a little bit lax in oversight of what's happening with their children. They let children take their devices into the room. Parents think that, okay, well, they're asleep, but actually what they're doing is they're using their devices. You know, through experience, you know, we have seen cases where children are so, addicted to social media that they will wake up in the middle of the night to check and see, well, what communication has happened. And, you know, in the middle of the night, they're there and they're chatting or whatever they are with others. So these things can have a huge impact on the overall, like, sleep, and then what happens in the daytime. Also, the parents themselves need to model the behavior of having routine and having bedtimes and whatever it may be. But inshallah, you know, having that type of, like, holistic perspective and talking with compassion but firmness with our children, and with setting down the rules, and, you know, letting them know that we understand what you're going through, but having that compassion, that empathy, but also kind of keeping up that perseverance and saying, you know, we have to change this, we're going to work on this, that slowly, slowly the parents will see that the child is having a better routine.
Okay. Thank you about that. Thank you for that, Sheikh Saleem. We have a few questions about the next seminars coming up. So November 21st is the next one. And inshallah, the main topic on that one is screens and video games. And you can send in your questions to us for those, inshallah. And, you know, we'll make sure that those thoughts are included in the presentation. Is there a resource, book or website which has collected the ways of how to encourage, attract 4 to 8 year old girls to do hijab while they don't go to masjid during the pandemic?
I'm sorry, what was the first part? Is there?
Resource, book, website, any kind of resource on how to encourage girls if they're not, you know, actively engaging with the community, Muslim community, or going to the masjid. Mm-hmm. During this transition time of becoming a baligh, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if Sister Sabika is online, and if she has anything to comment about that would be really appreciated. But right now I don't have anything available where I can just point to and say, okay, there's this resource. But inshallah, it's something that I can ask about and then share in the next seminar.
Inshallah. And then we can see it, exactly like you said, that, you know, any resources that Sister Sabika or Kissa that they're working on, other seminars that are happening, and we can reference those, inshallah. And we have, Salam, my kids are all under 5. Can you expand on the idea of until 7, be their slave, apply?
I actually did a seminar on this topic for the Houston IEC community over in the springtime. Like, I think it was around February, March, and those are available on YouTube. There was a 2-part seminar, and for a good portion of one of those 2 seminars, I covered these hadith, and I looked at them and I said that, what is the takeaway from all of them? There's not just one, there's a number of them. One of the wrong takeaways is to say that it means that the children are the master, and that means that I, as a parent, you know, need to kind of back away and not have any kind of expectations and not have any routines. Just let them take the lead in every way. That's not what's being meant, and that's not even, that goes against common sense. What is being said there is that having, in general, generally speaking, I spoke about it in detail in that seminar, and I gave you different examples. What we do know is being intended there is that the idea in the first 7 years, if parents come in and they're ordering their children around and they're having like high expectations that they're going to fall into line and do certain things like do this, don't do that. That is not a proper way of tarbiyah, and restricting the child's freedom to play, that's what is going to cause problems. Parents need to provide like a healthy environment for children to play in those years. They need to give them the freedom, even when in the way that they learn, it should be a way that, you know, they're not just always like sitting in one place and restricted. You have to do this. No, they should feel like more freedom to play, play-based learning. The idea of like, you know, that the children should feel like that they can explore and do things and not feel like everything's dangerous. Don't go there. Don't do this. You know, like the environment should be created at home so that they feel like that. But at the same time, you know, like giving, you know, like having certain routines, having certain expectations of what they can eat and whatnot. And then in certain times actually stepping in and saying that, okay, this thing, if you do it, it's dangerous for you. For example, my child who's young, they want to pick up a screen and they want to watch something. Well, it's not time. It's not screen time right now. It's going to be dangerous for them to have screen time right now. The answer is no. Even though they happen to be under 7 years, doesn't mean that they get to override and those things which are actually harmful for them.
Okay, thank you for that. We have 2 more. One is, there are 2 people asking for resources on doing Quran time with the kids at home. That applies to us. And make good resources or recommended resources of doing Quran time with kids at home.
Just some things that come to mind. One of them is, you know, like keeping it short and sweet, you know, not making it be something like very like, you know, kind of where the children get bored and tired. Another one is keeping it fun, meaning that have like a pleasant atmosphere, you know, like if you can have a nicely decorated part of your room or your house where you do it, maybe like having nice like decorations there, lights, whatever it may be. Another thing is that listening to a beautiful qari, at least sometimes, you know, sometimes in some qari, sometimes when you have the children recite. Another thing is keeping it regular and part of a routine. So it's like, okay, well, this is the time that we do it. Okay, this is Quran time. You know, it's not something where unexpectedly, like, you know, one day you're like, oh, let's do it right now when the children are not used to it, letting them know from beforehand. Another thing is like, if for those parents who are looking for curriculum, like let's say that, you know, so Kissa Kids has recently produced some Quran appreciation curriculum, and some of it like is being like published as we, you know, like as in these weeks, it's actually being reviewed and published. So there's some subject-wise Quran curriculum. So that's it more if you're taking responsibility for the Islamic education of your children, it's good for you to know that these resources are also available. So some of it's been publicized, some of it's going to be publicized in the upcoming months, inshallah.
Okay, thank you. We are at 11:33. I have one other question. I have just chatted that to you, Sheikh Salim, if you want to see if that is a question you want to address right now.
No, inshallah, that's something which maybe it's, because it's a specific question related to ahkam. Mm-hmm. If you could just ask the person who asked the question, just get their contact information or something so that we can respond to them on a private level. And I actually need to check the, ask the marja as well too, inshallah, so we can get the proper fiqh answer for that.
Inshallah. So we are at our time. It is 11:33. Thank you for a great session, Sheikh Salim. Inshallah, we're looking forward to the upcoming seminars. The seminars will be, inshallah, our aim is to have them at the Rice Channel live feed, and then they will be put up for after review and editing for some further access to the community. They should be available for review. And I will real quick share the timing and the schedule for the upcoming seminars again. And we will again be posting these into the overall community communication channels as well. For Sabah, for locals, Bay Area, through Rise Online, through Sabah Academy, Rise Academy, and Salam Online as well, and through the Kisa communication channels. Is it okay to end, Sheikh Salim, with no more Q&A as we're out of time?
Yeah, I think that, I think because our time, inshallah, will end right now. I just wanted to just say thank you to all administrators and teachers and volunteers and supporters and parents of Rise Academy and Rise Online, and Jazakumullah Khairan, and also to all the parents out there in whatever capacity. May Allah reward you for all your hard work and efforts in raising your children and taking the time to participate in this type of seminar. Inshallah, you'll be rewarded for this. And may Allah Ta'ala help us to all perform our responsibility, to know our responsibilities and to perform them for ourselves and for all those that Allah has entrusted with us. May He hasten the reappearance of the Imam of our time. Let's all recite a salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. All right. Thank you again, everybody, for joining us. Inshallah, we will see you all on November 21st. Thank you, Sheikh Salim.